We're joined now by Leonardo Flores. He is the Latin American campaign coordinator for Code Pink, based in Washington, D.C. And we are here to talk about the situation in Venezuela and Venezuela's coronavirus response, the impact of U.S. sanctions, and the U.S. drug charges that the United States filed against the Venezuelan president. And I wonder if we could maybe start with those drug charges. Why, in the midst of a pandemic, is the U.S. government indicting president of Venezuela?
Right. So in March, the State Department outlined, well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. In March, the U.S. State Department outlined a new strategy for Venezuela, or rather an updating of its strategy, and they called it Maximum Pressure March. They threatened to implement more sanctions, which they did. Trump himself made a threat of imposing a naval blockade on the country. And today we found out the news, Wednesday, we found out the news that the Trump administration is sending naval ships off the Venezuelan coastline. And then, of course, we have these indictments set out by the Department of Justice regarding the drug trade. So it's part of this regime change effort, this hybrid war that the Trump administration has been carrying out on Venezuela. And the fact that it's going on, that there's no kind of ceasefire in this hybrid war during this global pandemic, really speaks to a sort of ruthlessness in the Trump administration's regime change efforts. This hybrid war, and specifically the sanctions imposed by the Trump administration, have caused 100,000 deaths already in Venezuela. That's according to Alfred de Sayas, a former UN special rapporteur. And that was before the pandemic had occurred. And now we see Trump kind of doubling down on his regime change efforts, ignoring the pleas for global ceasefire that we've seen from everyone from the UN to the EU, and really kind of amping up the pressure at a time that really should be where we should be focusing on global health instead of warfare.
And this accusation against Maduro is that he was working with the Colombian militia group, the FARC, to flood the United States with cocaine, is in some ways an attempt by the United States to overthrow the president of Venezuela. It seems they haven't succeeded in doing that in their previous attempts, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And so these indictments are pretty preposterous. You're right. They blame Maduro. They claim that Maduro has this plot to import 250 tons of cocaine per year into the United States. But the facts don't bear that out. 90%, and this is according to the U.S. government's own statistics, 90% of the cocaine in the United States comes either directly from Colombia or transits Colombia. Only 7% of the routes of the cocaine that comes to the United States flows through Venezuela. And I have to emphasize that Venezuela neither produces the poppy, the coca leaf, nor produces cocaine. It is indeed a transit country for cocaine. But what Venezuela contributes to this global drug trade is a drop in the bucket to what Colombia does. Colombia is the world's biggest producer of cocaine. And of course, the United States is the world's biggest consumer. So the fact that they're focusing on Venezuela while ignoring Colombia, or not just ignoring, but continuing to give billions of dollars in military aid to Colombia, the world's number one producer, it tells me that this really isn't about cocaine at all. It's a political ploy to put more pressure on the Maduro government and, you know, to try to force regime change. It's all been about regime change for the Trump administration since he came into office, because he gets a lot of funding and a lot of support from right-wing Cuban Americans and Venezuelan Americans in Florida, which is a very important swing state, as you know.
And speaking of Florida, 800 Venezuelans in the U.S. took an emergency flight from Miami last week to return to Venezuela. From what we're hearing on the major media in the U.S., they're returning to a country that is chaotic, that is unable to cope with the pandemic. Why are they returning, and what's the situation in Venezuela right now?
So it turned out that the Trump administration actually blocked the flight. So these people weren't able to return. We're talking about some people who had been stuck in the United States and had been planning to travel to Venezuela, go back home to Venezuela, but flights were canceled. Others who are in the United States and would rather ride out the coronavirus epidemic in Venezuela. And yeah, the mainstream media portrays it as this chaos and a huge disaster waiting to happen, but the facts don't really bear that out in this case. So far, Venezuela has 143 cases of coronavirus with 3 deaths. This comes, 20 days after the first case was confirmed. And Venezuela, despite having its health sector decimated by the brutal U.S. sanctions that have been imposed on it, has been able to kind of stem the coronavirus because of very strict measures taken by the government. Like, for example, on day 4, on the fourth day of the coronavirus being present in Venezuela, there were 17 cases, I believe, in the country. And just with those 17 cases in a country of 30 million people, the government decided to order a nationwide quarantine, which is something we still haven't even seen here in the U.S., where we have, countries or cities like New York and New Orleans and towns all over the place kind of succumbing to this epidemic or becoming dire in many places.
And yet the U.S. continues to place sanctions on Venezuela. What is the U.S. justification for the sanctions and what's the impact?
So the U.S. justification for the sanctions is that they consider the Maduro government to be illegitimate. This really stems from presidential elections in 2018, where the U.S. really interfered very clearly. And they interfered by threatening candidates who were trying to run and telling them they may be sanctioned if they ran. And that led to an opposition boycott of that election, leading to a Maduro victory. And so the U.S. goal behind the sanctions is to force regime change within the country. Their fantasy, which has really no basis at all in reality, is that the people were going to rise up and overthrow the government because of the sanctions. What poll after poll tells us in Venezuela is that the United States and the Venezuelan members of the opposition who advocated for sanctions are increasingly being blamed for the impacts of the sanctions. And so I mentioned earlier the 100,000 deaths as a result of the sanctions. And it's not that sanctions directly kill people, it's that they decimate the economy, they decimate the health sector, and then health results become worse. So for example, there have been $130 billion in losses to the Venezuelan economy as a result of the sanctions, a 90% drop in foreign currency earnings, and Venezuela is an oil-based economy. So a lot of the early sanctions focused on the oil sector. And this had an impact on the country's health indicators. For example, undernourishment rose from 2% in 2013 to 13.4% in 2018. Maternal mortality rose from 68 deaths per every 100,000 live births in 2013 to 135 deaths per 100,000 live births in 2017. So double the maternal mortality. And these are kind of the statistics throughout, health indicators throughout the country show this clear deterioration in the well-being of Venezuelans. And it's very clearly linked to the sanctions because prior to the sanctions, since 1999, when the Bolivar revolution began in Venezuela, health indicators had been, doing very, very well because the government had been investing very heavily in all, not just health, but also in education.
Wow. And right now, as the world is facing this pandemic, the international solidarity is something that the U.S. has not engaged in much, but other countries like Venezuela have, including Cuba, that has just 130 cases of COVID-19, 2 deaths, but have deployed doctors all over the world, including to Venezuela. What are some of the lessons that we can learn from countries like Cuba and Venezuela in their leadership and dealing with the situations like the one the world is in now?
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing right now is countries like Cuba and China taking the lead in fighting this disease at a global level. And the United States, which generally takes pride in being a global leader with an event such as these have occurred, they've been very silent. And so what we're seeing, particularly in Latin America, is that the countries that are friendly towards Cuba and China and Russia and the other countries that are demonized by the United States have received aid, whereas the countries that rely on the U.S. have not received much aid. And so, especially we really have to highlight, as you did, the Cuban solidarity. They've sent doctors all over the world, and not just doctors, but Cuba has a drug called interferon alpha 2b that is shown to be effective against COVID-19 And they sent Venezuela 10,000 doses of this drug, and they sent this drug everywhere in the world. It's still not available here in the U.S. because of the sanctions. But, you know, I think what we're learning is that the world doesn't work the way that the Trump administration and the State Department want to tell us it works. It's not. America isn't really a global leader anymore, and it's not because it can't be, but it's because it doesn't want to be. And the Trump administration has been engaging in kind of almost like a sort of isolationism, but an isolationism while at the same time arming countries that want to engage in solidarity. And so the Trump administration has gone after these Cuban doctors, accusing them of being, or accusing the program of engaging in human trafficking, when really this program is saving lives all over the world and preventing the pandemic from being worse. And we saw that, we're seeing that not just with COVID-19, but we saw it a few years ago as well with the Ebola crisis.
Sorry, human trafficking? How is having doctors go to different places in the world engaging in human trafficking? I don't understand that logic.
Yeah, that's a great question. So what the Trump administration alleges is that the doctors are forced to go and work in other countries and that they have to send all of their salaries back to Cuba. Neither of those things are true. The doctors are volunteers, and they do have to send some of their salaries back to Cuba because that's the agreement that was reached with them. But not all. They get to live, you know, in other countries, and they receive salaries and live like normal people. It's really kind of another absurdity by the Trump administration and its attempts to demonize not just Cuba, but anything that even whiffs of socialism.
Do you think that this global pandemic and the varying responses to it could mark an end to U.S. imperialism, or the U.S. Declaring itself as the sole superpower in the world post-Cold War?
Well, we'll have to see really how the rest of the world reacts. Because one of the biggest enablers of U.S. imperialism in the world is the European Union. Another huge enabler is Canada. Already, the European Union has kind of come out against the sanctions during this time of pandemic, and they've asked the U.S. to grant sanctions relief for Venezuela and Iran, among others. We've seen kind of the pressure turning up on the Trump administration regarding these sanctions, not just from the EU, but also the UN. Even people in Congress are starting to question it. I think it's, you know, too soon to say whether this will be a death knell from U.S. imperialism. I really doubt it because of the billions and billions we spend on defense every year. I think something like $780 billion a year. But I hope that people will come to realize just how much damage U.S. foreign policy has been causing around the world. And really, as we're living through this pandemic and we're hearing from old friends and we're taking care of our neighbors and we're, you know, engaging in mutual aid throughout our communities, what I really hope is that people kind of internalize this and kind of apply it to our foreign policy. Instead of being the world's, you know, policeman or bully, the United States should really start acting like a good neighbor.
Is there any movement in Congress to lifting the sanctions on Iran and Venezuela at this time?
Yes. So in Congress, there's two letters that are being signed by various representatives and senators. One of them deals only with the sanctions on Iran, and another one that's led by Senator Chris Murphy deals with the sanctions in Iran on Venezuela. It's a little more limited in scope, and that one is basically lifting the sanctions for humanitarian reasons. Also, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar about a month ago released new legislation to grant greater oversight over sanctions, because sanctions, you know, as a foreign policy tool, it's very attractive to our representatives and senators because it doesn't mean boots on the ground, it doesn't mean bombs, and it, you know, doesn't mean direct deaths. But as we learn more and more about the impacts of sanctions, they clearly cause indirect deaths, they clearly cause suffering, and they're a collective punishment of civilians, which is really like a war crime. And so I think that their mentality surrounding sanctions is beginning to change in Congress, and I hope that that's what one thing that will come out of this global pandemic.
Well, thanks so much. And again, people can contact their senators and Congress members about supporting those letters. Leonardo Flores with Code Pink. And again, we'll have links to these articles that have been published by Leonardo Flores, Venezuela's Coronavirus Response Might Surprise You, on Code Pink, and that will be on KBOO.FM. This is Jenka Soderberg reporting for KBOO News.